Major Han, Real 60. Do you remember ever exercising to practice the counterstroke as a form of action?
No, I can't remember doing anything like that.
Would it be fair to say that the kind of defence operations you were practicing were ambushes followed by withdrawals?
I don't think that would be quite as an ambush. We had our set positions where we knew the enemy would be coming. And I don't think you could have done anything to set an ambush, because I think their strength was such, you know, that they'd be coming and overrunning everything.
And it was assumed they'd push back.
They tried mainly on the river lines. That's where they did most of their exercises, to try to hold them on river lines. The Weser and get the other name, but the Weser was one of them. And used to have sort of exercise with crossing the rivers on rafts and things like that with the tanks.
When the tanks were deployed on these defensive exercises and withdrawals, did they have infantry operating closely with them?
Always closely with the infantry, Because that was, you were, I'm not sure, but I think you would have probably a company of infantry, with at least a company with each regiment.
What about the Air Force? Did they take part?
Yes. Not in a great way, but they were always there. So I think they started having Harriers.
The Harrier, the jump jet.
Yeah. And used to see them on. And you used to see some of the rockets that the gunners used to have coming up. The great long things on trailers. I'm not sure what particular name they had then.
Would it be the Bloodhound?
The first ones they had. I don't think that was a Bloodhound.
Maybe the Bloodhound was an anti-aircraft missile.
I think very long thing on a mountain.
Would these have been the nuclear?
No. I don't think they were necessarily nuclear.
You said that, you know, the scenario always ended with a nuclear...
Yeah, the exercise used to end nuclear, and then the exercise would be ended.
How many days would it be?
About 5 days.
So you'd have 5 days of fighting, and then it would go nuclear.
But the other thing we used to do too, I used to have to go out on exercise with a brigade or division. I used to umpire, which was always very interesting. You'd know what the layout was, and you would be with an infantry battalion or something, and that'd be up to you to say, right, to the commanding officer, you're out, you've been knocked out, and things like that, which used to upset them a bit. But that's how you used to play it, and you saw what was happening, the tanks coming or whatever, and you could say, right, you're out.
Would you be going around on your own on those things?
Yeah.
Did you see other armies in action as well?
We did one once for the German army, which was very interesting. And they had, what would it have been then? Did they have the Leopard then?
Possibly the Leopard 1.
Yeah, I think that's, and that was rather funny. I saw them when I was with them on one exercise. There were about six of them. They were all firing ammunition blank on the roads. They used to ignore traffic or anything like that. And there was one poor chap in a Volkswagen, and there was one tank with its gun sort of just in front of him firing, and one behind me, about three of them all round this Volkswagen, all shooting. And this poor chap in the middle, absolutely petrified. But they used to take their training very seriously, and they didn't consider anybody else on the road. They shouldn't be there, as far as that goes. And then drive over gardens and fields and that with no thought.
Did you see them on any other occasion? German army?
Yeah, in barracks you used to see some of them. Not a great deal. You used to go and look over their tanks, and then you used to see them up on Hohner Ranges.
What impression did you get of them there? Were they good at their work?
I think so. I've always had greatest respect for Germans, for their discipline, and for their abilities, and very efficient. And so I would never run down the German army, really.
Did you see any other armies besides the German?
The French used to come up, but only to fire on home range as well. I didn't meet them, and the Belgians, but I didn't meet them to on exercise or anything like that.
Did you get any impression of them from seeing them on exercises on the or shooting on the ranges?
Not really. Yeah. Mm. I know they went up there and shooting, but what their shooting was like, I didn't know.
You didn't see it.
Well, you couldn't go up on the ranges. And I could have found out. I just imagine if I'd have asked the staff of the Hona Rangers, who I knew quite well, they could have told me, you know, what their shooting was like and things like that. Was that the same instructors used to be up there all the time, so they had a good idea to compare. But I know they used to have a shoot every year. I don't know if the French and Belgians were involved. I think they must have been a NATO shoot, I think. And they used to select who would win it, the shoot. And I think there was always a toss-up between the Germans, the English, and the Canadians.
Was this a competition?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that was very close between those three. Mm. I know there was a cup presented for the winners.
You mentioned the Leopard. Did you have a chance to have a look at one of those?
Only
detail.
Not really. And I know I climbed on it and looked in, but I didn't get to drive them or anything like that. Mm. So they looked a nice tank, I must say.
How often would you go out on a major exercise, a 5-day?
Well, at one time, early on in the 50s, there was a tremendous number of exercises. You know, you'd be out for a fortnight or a month on exercise. But then they got to the stage where it was all controlled. How much petrol you were allowed to use, how many track miles you were allowed to use on an exercise, because they started looking at the money. I think that was when the Germans weren't paying for it. When the Germans were paying for it, there was no
restriction.
No restriction at all. But then that got you allowed only so many miles in a year. Because a tank, after 3,000 miles, I think, or 3,100, 200 miles, it had to go back for a complete overhaul, you see. So they used to try to limit the amount of track miles you did to make the tank last long, and again, it was all money, and how much petrol a regiment was allowed in a year, you see, because when you used to go out on the next size with a tank, I think I used to work out that I would have to find out how much, that's when I was HQ squadron, and technical adjutant at one time, I used to work out that how many miles that exercise was going to be, how many track miles would be run. And I used to work on the thing of 4 gallons per mile per tank. Well, if you take 50 tanks at 4 gallons a mile,
that's 200 gallons for a mile for the 50 tanks, isn't it?
And then you take if they do 30 mile a day, that's a lot of petrol, which has to be there that night for them to fill up. And every night it goes for 5 days, it's still not possible. So it got to the stage where there's very few exercises taking place because of that restriction.
Did that have an impact on the skill of the regiment?
I don't think it had an impact on the skill so much, but it made life a bit boring. Because instead of being able to go out on exercise like they used to, they're restricted to the training, you know, with their, whatever they call them.
Simulators,
so on guns and that sort of thing. So if you didn't get out, you should do. Although I think armoured cars should get out far more, because they didn't use much petrol and that sort of thing. And that's why I always used to think an armoured car life was far better than
a tank life.
Tank life, really. Mm-hmm. Cleaner.
Cleaner. Why was it cleaner?
Well, in an army car, you didn't you used to get as dirty as you did in the tank, for the amount of dust and stuff that used to be thrown up in the tank.
And more freedom.
More freedom. You know, you were an individual as a tank commander, an army car commander, whereas in a tank, you were there all together, one squadron. But an armoured car man could go off on his own somewhere and he's completely does his own thing, really.
Now, well, you seem to have been in that role for about 5 years, from 1965 to 1970, commanding headquarters squadron. It's a rather long period.
Not quite as long as that.
Not as long as that.
No, because the regiment then, when we were in Oslo, I suppose I'd been there nearly 3 years. Mm. And the regiment were going back to Catterick as a training regiment. No, I can't say offhand, what would that be, 70? About 70, somewhere like that. And they went back to Catterick anyway. But, when they... When they were going to Catterick, I decided I didn't want to go to Catterick.
Why was that? Were you just happy living in Osnabrück? Was it?
Well, it wasn't that so much, but at that stage I had 4 children at boarding school. And when you were abroad, you got an allowance to pay for that.
Yeah.
But I think when you went back to England, you lost, if you didn't lose all of it, you lost a certain amount of it. And I thought, well, I couldn't really afford to do this. So I saw Colonel Mike Woodhead was commanding at the time, and I told him. And so, and Robert Brockbank was Brigadier IAC in.
When did Colonel Woodhead take over?
About a year before then, I should say.
Yeah. How did he do things the same way as Colonel Brockbank, or did he have a different style?
Much the same. They changed certain things.
What sort of things would have been changed? Because they were different backgrounds, really, weren't they?
Yes, but I think we were tanks then.
Yes, but you know, your early life does have an impact on the way you think, doesn't it?
It does. Yeah, I think Colonel Mike sort of really. Used to go out as much as he can, as he used to, as a tank commander.
Yeah.
And there was a difference, I think, in that, but how it affected the regiment, I don't know, really. But there was a difference in that way. I think Colonel Mike knew more about tanks and sort of really got in to look at the guns and look at this and that sort of thing, than Colonel Robert. Was really always an army commander. So anyway, when they were going, I said if there was a job in Germany, I'd like to stay. If not, I'd go back to the regiment. I knew it'd be pretty boring, and nobody wanted to go back to Catterick as a training regiment anyway.
Presumably, as a training regiment, you would simply be receiving recruits. Training them for a short time and then sending them on, would that be?
That would be a pretty routine.
An endless cycle.
And so, General Robin, as I say, was in Corps headquarters. And he said, oh, there's a job coming up, your old job, back with the delivery squadron.
Oh.
And Lionel Bailey, who was doing it at the time, he was Queen's Bay. He's coming here next month, staying with me. He wants to go out because his parents have died and he's got an estate to take over in Guernsey. Would I like to go and carry on? So I went back and I took up the reins again of the delivery squadron.
Had anything changed there?
Yes. They'd closed down Mönchengladbach and everything was in hand. There was only 60 tanks in Ham, and there was another 60 forward, can name the case anyway, well forward in dry clad in these cocoons. So I had 120 tanks, but 60 were there ready. The others were also ready, but they were in cocoons.
This is what they used to call mothballing, isn't it?
Yeah, but yeah. They had a plastic cover.
Yes.
The tank was all ready and well maintained, put in, and then they had this cover over them and a dehumidifier in it to keep the temperature right so it wouldn't go rusty. Mm. And I had one man looking after them.
Just one?
Just one. He had to go around, sort of look through the people, read the different things. And, and at certain times, then you might have to take one out, put another one back, you know, that sort of thing. So I didn't have anywhere near as many men then as I did before. Of course, the six tanks per regiment that I also had held before, the regiments didn't have, there were six reserve tanks, were always held by the delivery squadron. Mm. But by the time I went back, those six tanks per regiment had been given back to the regiment, and they were then responsible for them. They
they've been displaced forward.
That's right, you see. So that's where you lost, say, about another 60 tanks. Of the 180 I used to have, 60 at hand, 60 in dry clad, and the other 60 had gone back to the regiment. So, but there was still quite a good job. I enjoyed it, and still the turnover of tanks to regiments.
What about your staff? Did you still have your German civilians?
I still had the German staff, but of course reduced greatly by then. And I still had the fitters, the English side, and the German side as well. But as I say, I think I only had about 50 to 60 people then. One officer, and the Eckies and that sort of thing. And the Reamy. But still, it was quite a good job anyway. And we were housed in the same barracks as the transporter unit, which was a Polish manned effort. And so we got a chance of driving the Antars around. And if you wanted a tank to go somewhere, the Antars was right on the spot.
How many of them were there available?
Oh, I think there must have been. I think they had the capacity to carry a complete regiment. And they were all housed in.
So there must have been about 50 of those then.
Yeah, about 50, I think. It was a lovely sight to see that lock on the way loaded up, really.
One tank per Antar.
Yeah, and there was a Polish driver. That was run by an RASC commander and a captain and lieutenant. But the rest of it had all the same thing as I had in Polish as opposed to German. And so we worked on well together there. So that job went very well. And in the meantime, I bought a house in Cornwall. So this was after about 2 years there, near enough. I was thinking, right now, I've only got another 2 years near enough to serve.
So you're thinking ahead?
I was thinking ahead. So I got the house in Cornwall, and I thought, well, I've got to now start thinking about a job in England so I can work on the house in Cornwall. It was an old farmhouse, it needed lots of work on it. And I thought, right, I can get a job after a couple of years and go. And whilst I was in Ham, I used to go out on exercises, the toots with Corps headquarters, which was always very, very interesting. And so kept your hand in with all the staff of the Corps headquarters. They were at Bielefeld at the time. And eventually they offered me a job. I said I want somewhere in the south of England, near to Cornwall as you could get. And near to Cornwall, they offered me a job in Horsham at the School of Preliminary Education.
What did that do? What was the School of Preliminary Education?
Well, they were there. It was run by the Education Corps.
Yes.
And they had all these lads from infantry regiments.
Junior soldiers.
Not junior soldiers, not necessarily, junior. But a lot of them were, who couldn't read or write, or they had difficulties.
And stuff like that. So they were recruits, weren't they?
Basically. Yes. Yeah. And they were given, apart from, they had foot drill and stuff like that, but they also were given education. Mm. That was their main reason for being there. If they'd been to their depots and whatnot, and would for being equipped and all that sort of thing, then they would be sorted out and sent to Caution.
So they'd done basic training, didn't they?
Yes. But they wanted, before they could go on, to be trained in whatever arm they were going to take up in their units. They had in need of further education. And this job of adjutant was coming up, so they offered me that, which I thought was quite a good job. You know, it didn't stretch at all.
Well, it suited your purposes, presumably, at the time.
It did, yes. And so when this came up, I had to hand over to a chappie who was from the Greys. And so I took him round and showed him the 2 Army Delivery Squad and said, you know, it's easy to run, you know, you don't have any worries, you know, you do this, that, and all through, keep your hands on the reins. He gave up after 2 months. He couldn't stand the stress of it. I just couldn't stand it. Really. But he just couldn't cope with it. The responsibility was too much.
What impression did he make on you when you met him? Did you have any suspicion that he might be?
He wasn't a young soldier. Mm-hmm. He was. I think he'd. I don't know if he'd done quartermastering or something like that, but. He was an old soldier who knew his way around and that sort of thing. And it just, he said he couldn't take responsibility. Yeah, you know, it's amazing, really.
Do you know what he'd been doing before he came to?
I'm not sure. I'm not absolutely certain what he'd done, actually. But as I say, he couldn't handle it. But I couldn't see what there was that he couldn't handle. So I strike some people. But anyway, I got to this job in
Caution,
which I found was a very easy job. Had a nice quarter, and all the other officers were Education Corps.
How did you get on with them? Because they must have been an entirely different kettle of fish than what you've been used to.
With them. You know, there was a commanding officer who was very nice, and a major. The second in command, and chief instructor, the majors, and they had about 3 majors who were company commanders, with lieutenants or captains under them to look after the education of the men.
How many men would there be in the school at any one time? Do you know what the numbers were?
Well, there were 3 companies. And I should say that there'd be about 200 or 300.
200 or 300. And roughly how long would they spend at the school before they moved on?
At least 3 months, at least.
What was actually on the syllabus? Was it purely literacy, or were there other things?
Yes. Just they used to go out on exercises to, you know, take them out the classroom. Mm. They used to do map reading and things like that. But it was mainly in the classroom, which they were occupied.
Do you know what methods were used, and you know how big the classes were?
Not really. I think they had about 3 officers per company, either lieutenants or captains. So, and if they had somewhere around about 30 to a class, might have been less than that. Mm. So 39, so that would work out about 300 people, wouldn't it?
Yes.
Yes. But I never used to take a lot of interest in that, because that wasn't my area. I didn't go round the classes or anything like that, because as I say, my job really was the admin side and the adjutant side. Well, I didn't have, there was a quartermaster who did all the admin side and
the domestic.
Domestic. Mm-hmm. And I was really there with a commanding officer as his adjutant. Mm. But I never used to interfere, or, well, I couldn't interfere with the teaching side, because I knew nothing about it.
What did you do for the commanding officer then? What were your duties mainly?
Job to say, really.
Did you deal with the disciplinary side?
Oh, yeah, there was an RSM.
Yes.
Anybody who came through, they would be dealt with on their own, because they had each company had a sergeant major.
Yes.
And they did their discipline within their company. Mm. The only thing that I would deal with, if it came up that the company commander couldn't deal with it,
came up on CO's orders,
the RSM, and it would come through me to feed into the commanding officer. And there wasn't a great deal for me to do, quite honestly. I used to find that I could have been made redundant as easy as anything, because the jobs were so few that I could deal with. Everything else was education. Mm. And not a lot of other things came up.
What did you do then to keep yourself occupied? Because
reading.
Was there sport to organise? You get involved in doing that?
No, that was all done by companies.
It was done by companies.
You were there, and you were an adjutant, but not like with the regiment, where you had to organise exercises or anything like that. All that was all done by company commanders. Mm. See, so it was a pretty boring job, really. Mm-hmm. And the quartermaster took care of all the admin side. The RSM there was there for discipline. In the office, there was a chief clerk and two typists. And so, as I say, there were very little.
Very little things to actually do.
No. Mm. No. But as I say, it was more of a job where I was keeping. And when, after that ran out, I was only there for a certain time, and they were, I don't know if they're going to get a replacement, or they made the job a sort of a redundant job, because they had the work study people come round. Interviewed and sort of. So I think my job went for the board anyway. Mm. And so my job came up, and I still had 6 months to serve.
Yes.
So I went up to AG 17 and saw the brigadier, AG 17, and he said, Freddy, what can we do with you? He said, there's only 6 months to serve. He said, not many places where we can send you for 6 months. You know, it's normally a 2 year or 12 months for the outside. He said, there's nothing I can send you, unless I send you to Northern Ireland. So I said, oh, come off a brigadier. I said, I've fought all over the world. I said, it'd be just my luck on my last day getting onto a bus to come back to England or something, I'd be shot. I said, I don't think I'd fancy that at all. He said, yeah, I quite agree, Freddy, it would be a bit wrong. He said, well, what can I give you to do? I said, well, Brigadier, I've got at least 2 acres of land down in Cornwall that need digging. I said, that's going to take me 6 months easily. He said, all right, you go home, dig up. If I want you, I'll send for you. And that was it. I went down to Cornwall. And I dug, and then on my last, just before my birthday, I went to Bovington and saw General Robin, who was Director of Royal Army Corps then, I think, in Bovington. Saw him, and said goodbye. He said, thank you very much for all your help, and I was out of the army. That was it.
So you effectively finished with 6 months gardening leave.
Yeah, which is very good. Very, very good, I think, really.